The John Carlson Show. Thanks for being here. If you're beyond the confines of Washington State, we're kind of in between the two storm systems that are going to punch Western Washington. I'll tell you a little bit more about what's coming later tonight, basically midnight tonight and into tomorrow morning. I'm Phil Vandervoort, John Carlson's producer, in for John this morning. John's just taking the day off, and we'll bring you some of the best moments of John's show, but I also have a lot of information to bring you as well as it relates to the weather situation that we've got, continuing power outages that we've got. We had a tornado warning yesterday on the Washington coast around Grays Harbor County, Grayland, Westport area. We'll get you recapped on that. But then we've also got to get you up to date on what's going to be happening as another weather system moves in this evening around midnight. So those are a couple of things that are immediately on tap here as I take over for John Carlson on the commute with Carlson here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Puget Sound Energy still has 300-something thousand customers without power. Crews are making some progress in restoring electricity. Here's a little bit of the update from Puget Sound Energy first thing this morning.
Since the start of the storm, we have restored about 300,000 customers. Due to extensive wind and equipment damage, power for some customers may be out for an extended period.
And I was out into eastern King County yesterday. My family has a cabin up in the foothills outside of Enumclaw. And I went out there to kind of make sure that there wasn't any tree wind damage at the cabin. So I drove from Seattle basically out towards Kent Kangley was where I was aiming to get out past Ravensdale is where I needed to go. And knew that Highway 169 out of Maple Valley out towards Kent Covington, Kent Kangley, the Four Corners area in Ravensdale was blocked by some storm damage. And so I took a different route to get out there. I ended up coming down I-5, going out Highway 18, and you get out towards Covington, and there are so many areas that still have power outages. Traffic lights are out, become four-way stops, and I was trying to proceed down 272nd out there in Covington off of Highway 18, and traffic is really stacked up, and I suspect that if your commute today involves anything along those lines, you're going to have similar situations wherever the power is still out and those four-way intersections or those lighted intersections become four-way stops, traffic stacks up. So plan on extra time. That's one of the first reminders this morning. Plan on extra time and keep that in mind if you're going to be going from an area that does have electricity and the lighted intersections are operating normally to those ones that are still darkened and make sure that you plan a little extra time. And so out in Covington yesterday, I ended up jumping off of 272nd and took some back roads, went out by Lake Sawyer, thinking I was going to cut through Black Diamond. Black Diamond had a giant tree across the road right there in the kind of heart of downtown, call it downtown Black Diamond by the Sahara Pizza and the town market that they've got there. And luckily the detour was super easy and super simple, but big tree down across Highway 169 there in the heart of Black Diamond, and a bucket truck. Guy was up in the top of the bucket truck chopping small pieces off the top so that they could kind of get the whole giant tree removed, and it was laying across power lines. And I ultimately made it out to where I needed to go. Basically north and east of Enumclaw, and even on the road north out of Enumclaw at the fairgrounds, I think it's called the VZ Cumberland Road or the VZ Enumclaw Road, they're north out of Enumclaw at Highway 410 and the fairgrounds intersection, and a giant tree was across that road as you head towards the City Hall Saloon out there in Cumberland, and I didn't have much other choice than to drive underneath it. It's not the wisest thing to do, but several other vehicles, it's somewhat lightly traveled road, even in the best of conditions. And the vehicles in front of me kind of sized it up and proceeded to drive underneath it. And as of yesterday afternoon, 2 o'clock or so, it was still laying across the road, held up by power lines on one side with just enough of a 45-degree angle from where it tipped over on that road north of Enumclaw that most vehicles, probably even some somewhat decent-sized trucks, could have made it through. That was my experience yesterday as I was heading back and forth out to Eastern King County to check on a family cabin. Now, Puget Sound Energy spokesman Gerald Tracy, you just heard here a moment ago, says that they're sitting with 300,000 customers in the dark. And the question is, okay, how much longer is it going to take for Puget Sound Energy customers to get the power back on?
So our first step in restoring the power is damage assessment, right, and getting a look at what's been done to the system to determine the extent of repairs needed. Our crews are continuing to survey the damage, even right now in the morning, but it's really going to pick up again as the early morning hours progress.
So Saturday, they're saying, the Puget Sound Energy spokesman saying Saturday, so you've got another 36 hours, 48 hours or more. And if you've ever, I mean, I think most people who end up experiencing power outages, you tend to know I'm in an area that's got a few more customers, and the more customers you have, that's more or less how they resolve a lot of this power outage stuff. They want to try and switch back on as many customers as they can as quickly as possible. So if you're in a more isolated area, you've probably experienced this in the past. You're more isolated. You're more likely fewer customers around you, around where you live. That means you're probably at the end of the list to get power restored. And hopefully people that kind of know that they're isolated based on these prior experiences are prepared and know, yeah, I'm going to be one of the last ones to get power on. I live in a portion of North Seattle, a couple of dead-end streets in a cul-de-sac, and that seems to be our fate on the dead-end streets that I live on compared to more densely populated neighborhoods nearby. It seems like whenever the power goes out, ours is almost always the last to get restored, and we could just walk a couple of blocks, and you see that everybody else has their power on. Ours is not, as an example. And it's just sometimes the way it goes based on the geography of where you live. So that's the status for Puget Sound Energy customers right now. And a lot of the, let me pull up the outage map. I had this up here a minute ago. Yeah, a lot of the power outage. There's still a strip. It looks like, that's Highway 410. I want to get back to the North Bend corridor because the North Bend corridor, looks like North Bend is back in business. So that's good because North Bend, I think, was one of the first areas to go out. East of Renton, Ravensdale, I'm looking at. And try and get this map to move for me. Out towards Enumclaw, a lot of outages out still near Enumclaw. The Auburn corridor, I think that's Highway 164 that runs out that way. Southeast of Auburn. That area is looking a lot better. But basically Enumclaw north into Ravensdale and out towards Covington. And then that Four Corners area, Maple Valley, still a lot of outages all the way up to Renton. Lots of areas east of Lake Sammamish. Issaquah has been hammered really badly. And then Sammamish, the plateau, all that looks pretty bad. And then getting a little bit farther north, Woodinville, it's Cottage Lake area out that way. Those are the other most heavily hit areas. And Mercer Island apparently is almost completely out of power. I've heard one report from Como so far this morning that says a grocery store has electricity. So I'm wondering if that's a generator situation. But Mercer Island is the other area that's really badly in the dark right now. So let's kind of keep going about this. The wind system, this windstorm that was generated overnight Tuesday into Wednesday, yesterday afternoon, it created a waterspout out on the Washington coast. The waterspout itself was spotted in the Long Beach area. I think Ocean Park is the specific section of the Long Beach area in Pacific County where it was spotted, and it prompted a tornado warning by the National Weather Service, the tornado warning came down for Westport, Grayland, and then kind of north and east into Grays Harbor itself and Hoquiam. Now, K2 News in Portland managed to interview the Long Beach area weather watcher who spotted this waterspout.
The roaring and rumbling of the waves crashing.
And self-proclaimed weather geek Ian Reed saw what looked like a funnel of clouds.
The Cape Disappointment Lighthouse, and I knew there were storms in the area, and I checked my radar app, and there was a special marine warning that the National Weather Service had issued. And I went back to the Lewis and Clark Interpretive Center. And when I got there, once I got to the observation deck, I looked out and it was right there, clear as day.
It was a waterspout that prompted a tornado warning for Pacific County.
It happened over water where there were no boats or anything. So really the impacts are pretty limited.
Scott McDougall is the director of Pacific County Emergency Management.
So it all kind of started on the waters off of Pacific County, Long Beach Peninsula, and then was pushing north and east. And that's why tornado warning was issued for the greater Grays Harbor area. Now, if you want to see a picture of the waterspout, we've got a picture of it on KVI.com. What you want to do is hit up KVI.com, punch that in, and then click on the story. It should be right there at the top of the page. We have three stories that will cycle through, kind of our three top stories that cycle through at the top of our page. But the title of the story says, Video, Vicious Windstorm Damage from Bomb Cyclone in Washington. We've been compiling all these social media posts of the video footage, whether it's King County, out on the Washington coast, somewhere else. So if you go to KVI.com, you want to see that water spout. And there's also a Doppler image, a radar image of that storm cell as it went across Grays Harbor. That is all right there on KVI.com. Just click on the story that says Video, Vicious Windstorm Damage from Bomb Cyclone in Washington. Alrighty. Now, I'd mentioned this to kind of kick off the segment. I'm Phil Vandervoort, John Carlson's producer, in for John this morning. John's just taking the day off here. So we have another windstorm arriving late tonight, and that round of strong winds arrives at midnight tonight, expected to last 9 or 10 hours into tomorrow morning, the late morning tomorrow. If you're out on the coast, winds could kick back up to 50 to 70 miles an hour. And then back into King County, some of the same areas that have been hit the hardest Tuesday night into Wednesday. It's going to be that Enumclaw to North Bend stretch. And the weather predictions are for 30 to 50 mile per hour winds overnight tonight. Here's a more of an explanation from Como 4's Rebecca Stevenson.
But the next weather maker is when this new area of low pressure comes spinning around and up the coast. We're expecting this to start happening late tomorrow. And as this area of low pressure gets to the south coast, we're going to have those strong, gusty east winds from midnight tomorrow night to about 9 a.m. through the foothills of the Cascades. About 30 to 50 miles an hour, 50 miles an hour around Enumclaw. We'll expect that around North Bend and those gaps that typically give us the stronger wind. However, as that area of low pressure gets just on the other side of the Olympic Mountains around 9:10 a.m. on Friday, the wind shifts to southerly and we'll get the most powerful wind out on the coast. And that's where the gusts will be 50 to 70 miles an hour on the coastline. And inland, the wind will be breezy, but not as strong as what we just went through. Nowhere near is strong on our Friday morning even.
So there's the silver lining with what's coming, another tough round of wind coming tonight into tomorrow morning, that it's not going to be as bad as it was Tuesday night into Wednesday. And you heard Rebecca Stevenson's report. That was from last night's 11 o'clock news. So she's kind of referencing tomorrow in that, which amounts to today. So basically that wind storm kicking back up again tonight at midnight and lasting until 9 or 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Now, one national story that I want to get in here as we get the show underway on a Thursday morning here on Talk Radio 570 KVI is the conviction in Georgia of the accused killer of Laken Riley. And Jose Ibarra was convicted all 10 counts yesterday. And this was the bench trial. It was not a jury trial. It was a bench trial. And here's that judge issuing the first four convictions on the first four of the 10 counts against Jose Ibarra.
Count one, malice murder. I find the defendant guilty. Count two, felony murder. I find the defendant guilty. Count three, felony murder. I find the defendant guilty. Count four, felony murder. I find the defendant guilty.
And you can hear the emotional gasps in the courtroom there as the judge gives his verdict. The Associated Press posted this, and this all happened right around the time John Carlson's show was wrapping up yesterday, that the guilty verdict came in. The Associated Press posted this about the guilty verdict. Breaking. A man was convicted of murder in the killing of Georgia student Laken Riley, a case that fueled the national immigration debate. And it's such a disingenuous way to characterize the trial, let alone the conviction. A man was how they decided to describe the defendant in this case. And then they add in the tail end, a case that fueled the national immigration debate. Wow. Why did it fuel a national debate about immigration? Is it because the defendant who was convicted yesterday? Is it because the defendant was a man? Is it because the defendant was a woman? Is it because the defendant was trans? No. It was because the defendant was an illegal alien that got into this country. And one of the other angles of this story that has come out is that the defendant, Jose Ibarra, according to the defendant's own roommate, they were given transport to the state of Georgia from New York. And so the Associated Press, just simplifying this as a man was convicted, completely changes the story, and it completely ignores what made this story national news in the first place. Was that Jose Ibarra should not have been in this country. Had he not been in this country, Laken Riley almost certainly would still be alive today. And so the other aspect of the story that I'll bring in here real quickly is the testimony in court by the roommate of Jose Ibarra, who was convicted in the murder of Laken Riley. The roommate testified that they arrived in Georgia by way of a humanitarian flight from New York City back in 2023. And Georgia's Republican governor, Brian Kemp, is demanding the Biden administration provide more information about this. And according to the Daily Caller, they have a comment attributed to the spokesperson for the Georgia governor that says, while the Biden administration continues to ignore our request for accurate and detailed information on illegal border crossings and relocation efforts, Governor Brian Kemp has positioned Georgia to do what it can to address the crisis at the border by taking decisive action like deploying our National Guard to the U.S. southern border and signing legislation that strengthened Georgia's reporting requirements for illegal immigrants arrested for crimes and ban on sanctuary cities. So the Georgia governor is demanding answers from the Biden administration. Those answers have yet to be provided. I'm in for John Carlson this morning. I'm his producer, Phil Vandervoort. Lars Larson's going to join me in just a little under 30 minutes here as I sit in for John Carlson. And then coming up next, we got the social media sweep. So we'll bring that in. So in the social media sweep, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort, we've got some news, hard news here, as we've been spending so much time the last couple of days talking about the storm situation, the wind conditions, the power outages, and so forth. Jeremy Harris, a Como TV reporter, posted this story. They've got a 14-year-old boy that's been arrested after Seattle police say he fired shots at officers during a pursuit in a stolen car. The report says police did not return fire, but they were able to get the car pulled over eventually and made that arrest. So 14-year-old, another case of a juvenile illegally possessing a gun, in this case, shooting at police. And John Carlson earlier in the week talked about a story that developed late last week. Friday, there was a robbery spree between Tukwila and Seattle. Police eventually arrested three suspects. One of those three was an 11-year-old. So here in a week's time, you've got an 11-year-old who was armed with a rifle by the two 19 and 21-year-old suspects that were also arrested. And then you've got this case of a 14-year-old with a gun shooting at police, all in less than a week's time. And the hits just keep on coming for juvenile crime stories in King County. And given the approach that King County has had on all of this, is this any surprise? And but more importantly, when on earth are we going to be able to expect an ending to this? Dow Constantine's not running for re-election. Are we going to get some of these announced candidates, the two King County Council members that say they want to take over for King County Executive? When are we going to get them to start addressing some of these stories that are going on in the news? Because this trajectory that we're on with juvenile crime is just off the charts. Not sustainable. Sustainable is the word that the political left always loves to use. And yet we continue to have these outrageous stories with juveniles and guns in King County. At this point on the show, we always like to hear from KVI's Lars Larson, our midday host, noon to three. And Lars, just as John's show was starting to wrap yesterday, this guilty verdict was coming down in Georgia in the murder trial and the rape trial of Laken Riley. And yep. I know you...
Of Jose Ibarra, who is accused of attempting to rape her and then murdering her, beating her to death with a rock. And it's the whole story is horrific.
Yeah. Yes.
But guess what? Georgia, which has the death penalty, and unlike Oregon and Washington, they actually use the death penalty. But they have one of those George Soros specials DAs for Athens and Clark counties.
The city of Athens, Gonzalez. Yeah, the county where Athens is in Georgia, sure.
Yep. And they said, she said, I'm not going to seek the death penalty. And people in Georgia are angry, and they should be, because when the citizens of a state say this is the law, and we do want the death penalty, but only for the worst of the worst cases, this one fits the bill. She just said, nope, death, he's going to get life in prison without parole, except that, Phil, you and I both know that life in prison without parole frequently turns into life in prison with parole, because we see, 10, 20 years down the road, they say, oh, the Menendez boys, they were right. So nice,
how,
except
how did
for
that
murdering
case
their parents.
Flip around like that?
Well, and yeah. It's because of a George Soros special, Gascon. And by the way, what cities have you seen boot their bad DAs or bad prosecutors? Seattle booted its former city prosecutor, replaced with a good one, hasn't done it yet with King County. San Francisco. Booted Chesa Boudin. L.A. has now booted George Gascon. Chicago, Kim Fox isn't going to run for re-election because she knew she'd get clocked. Portland ditched finally, Mike Schmidt for brains. And Schmidt for brains was the worst. Walked into office and said, I will decline to prosecute 1,000 cases. So this kind of thing where we have a whole system. People elect their reps. The reps write the laws. The laws are the laws of the state. And you get one person, a D.A., who gets to override that entire decision.
Yeah, and I think this is another case, at least for Washingtonians, to remember why the death penalty, just to completely take it off the table for the political reasons, it kind of removes a tool from the possible toolbox for a prosecutor. You don't have to use it in every case, but to be able to have it as available, it can create leverage on a defendant and create leverage in a case where you might be able to solve more crimes if that's available, taking it off the table.
We have never had a state in America whose voters have voted to repeal the death penalty. It has never happened. So what is that saying? It's saying one person, the DA, gets to submit or substitute his personal moral judgment for the will of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of voters.
Very good. It's Lars Larson. He's on the air from noon to 3 here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. He's keeping tabs on everything that's going on around the Pacific Northwest and nationally as well. Lars, have a great Thursday. Thank you very much. In for John Carlson here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. The weather situation, we're going to have high winds that are kicking back up tonight at midnight. It's going to be worst out along the coast, probably by the time we get to this time tomorrow morning. This time tomorrow morning, the wind direction is going to reverse around. We're going to have the winds coming out of the south again instead of the east. And the low pressure system that we've got off the coast is responsible for this. So it's going to be a slightly miniaturized version of what we went through Tuesday and Wednesday. Young Zach's with me. He's here in the studio helping run the show this morning. Good morning, Zach.
Good morning. Get your hand crank radios ready so you can still listen to KVI after the storm.
John was using the hand crank radio in the studio yesterday. And I know we've given out a lot of those over the years to KVI listeners, and I didn't have to resort to using mine, but my wife asked just in case, hey, where's that at? I said, it's right here in the workbench. It's all good. We got it set. I was through Black Diamond yesterday. I noticed that there was a pretty decent lineup to get to the Cenex station there, and I suspect that people were filling up their gas containers for repowering and refueling all the generators. Black Diamond had a big giant tree across the middle of Highway 169 there at Sahara Pizza. I was trying to get out towards Ravensdale yesterday. I gave up on my preferred path. They're getting out towards the Four Corners and the Kent Kangley intersection, and that whole dilemma with power being out, lighted intersections are out, it's a four-way stop, traffic backs up, takes forever to get back and forth, so be aware of that. Keep on a lookout. There were a couple times I got back into Seattle and there were some lights that were on and some lights that were off in some areas. And I started rolling up to intersections and all of a sudden I realized, oh my gosh, that light is out. That one is not on. And so if you're in those areas where some places have power, some places don't, keep that in mind.
Unlike
as you're
the
out
Mike
there.
Tyson fight, they were lights out.
Yes, exactly.
That was an awful joke. I'm sorry.
Well, the Mike Tyson, Jake Paul event is a gift that keeps on giving for comedy though. The Social Media Sweep, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. I'm John's producer, Phil Vandervoort. The first story I want to get to here in the Social Media Sweep has to do with the drive to tax the rich here in the state of Washington.
I've never heard of such an idea.
Right? The capital gains related stuff.
Is this new?
So the social media handle, BSeattle.org. So I don't know if that means they've got the website, BSeattle.org, but whatever. They're calling themselves B Seattle, and their social media profile says, building the power and leadership of renters and people experiencing homelessness in Seattle. And they posted this yesterday. There are 2 billionaires and 14 centimillionaires, so 100 millionaire rich people, living in the city of Seattle. The city should easily tax them enough to fill the gap in the city's general fund without even making a dent in their lifestyle. It's a choice to place the burden of the deficit on our communities. I'm going to read that line one more time because I don't understand what that means. It is a choice to place the burden of the deficit on our communities. Oh, I guess the budget deficit. And that's the choice that we have to base it on everybody. And this is the, I guess, general approach to taxing the rich. You know, oh, they can afford it. It won't hurt them. So, you know, you could tax me more too. I could probably afford to pay more in taxes. Does that mean it's right? Does that mean it's worth pursuing?
For people who say tax the rich, they tend to just live by tax. Mm-hmm. Just tax the people.
There's never.
They rarely actually tax the rich.
Yeah, and there's never anything analyzed about, okay, hey, we don't have enough money specific to this post and the city of Seattle being in a budget deficit. Can we take from somewhere else and cut back somewhere else so that we can focus on what's most necessary? And we talked about this ridiculous street trolley in South Lake Union that's sucking money for 500 passengers a day. Okay. But back to this poster about, oh, we can tax the rich. They're centimillionaires. They're billionaires. It won't change anything they do. Okay, then. If it's so easy to do that, how about you just go and ask those folks for the money? And if it is so easy for them, and if it won't do anything to hurt them or won't really do anything to change them, I'm guessing they'd probably give it to you of their own free will. But if they don't give it to you of their own free will, then maybe, just maybe, they've got more important plans for that money than having it spent by the officials who are in control of the city of Seattle.
Also, I don't care what their plans are. It's their money. Yeah.
Exactly. But that's the mentality. It's not your money. It should be my money. And that's the danger of this incessant mania to just tax the rich. All right. Hey, everybody. I'm Phil Vandervoort, John Carlson's producer. John's out today. Young Zach is with me. Zach, one of the things I was going to bring up on a social media sweep a little bit earlier, didn't get in, but let's try and plug it in now, is another exit poll has to do with the presidential election. And this one comes back from the Harris polling outfit. And it basically said swing voters, even though they had negative feelings about Trump's about Trump in general, 60% approved of his first term. So the outcomes of his first term. And it says, even though swing voters had net negative favorability ratings for Trump, 3 and 5 approved his first term of his first term. And that's kind of underscoring the reason Donald Trump got reelected. It says, while views of Trump personally were underwater, about 44%, a majority of voters did feel that he handled the job as president well from 2016 to 2020. Had a 6% or a, pardon me, a 56% approval rating based on that. And they kind of point to that as a swing factor and why Kamala Harris lost. It says among swing voters, while 53% viewed Trump unfavorably, those swing voters, 59% of them approved of the job he did as president. So there's another exit poll to kind of give us some insight on how it happened the way it did.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Voting for Democrats, like giving to charity, it feels good, but at some point you can't afford to do it. Yeah. It doesn't matter if you like Trump or not. Yeah. It matters is, can you afford to vote against him? And I think for a lot of Americans, the answer was no.
The bathroom controversy in Congress. Nancy Mace is the Republican congresswoman. She wants to make it your biological sex for which bathroom you use. The U.S. Senate has a trans woman from Delaware. And Martina Navratilova is the legendary women's tennis player. And Martina Navratilova does not seem to be comfortable with this idea of trans people using a different bathroom than their biological sex. And she wrote, one trans-identified male affects every single female in that space. She posted this on X. And she writes, some people might be okay with this, some people might not. So who are we going to accommodate? Whose feelings are we going to validate? And Martina Navratilova sums it up this way. She says, there must be a safe way for everyone, but women should not have to take chances here. So this whole debate about trans people using one bathroom versus the other, Martina Navratilova kind of cuts to the chase and says that it's women that shouldn't have to feel vulnerable or uncertain about their safety when they use the bathroom.
That's some extremist stuff there, Phil.
Yeah, right.
That's a hot take.
So that is not going to play well into the Democrats and the devoutly pro-trans activists who are just trying to push this through unilaterally. And this kind of comes back to what Martina Navratilova just put down, was how I was seeing the whole issue of trans athletes in sports. The people that are going to decide this are going to be the female competitors. And if they're cool with trying to play against somebody who used to be a dude, then it'll happen. And if they're not, it won't. And particularly in youth sports. I've got an 11th grader. He plays a lot of soccer for a club team and for a rec team. And he's my son. You know, if I had a daughter, this would be different. And I would imagine that the parents of daughters who are playing sports, they're going to have plenty to say about this as well, but it's going to be the participants. And for the underage athletes, it's going to be the parents that are going to determine what happens. And if everybody's cool with it, then it'll happen. And if a couple of potential scholarship players out of high school miss out on opportunities in college, you know what? That's something that they'll have to decide on. Am I cool with a trans athlete getting recruited to a school that I would have hoped to go to, play a sport that I would have hoped to play? So the other thing with the Nancy Mace proposal in Congress, you know, is this going to be the litmus test for the rest of the country? Or is this just going to be a tempest in a teacup? And, you know, like every other issue for school, it's going to get decided on a city by city, county by county type basis.
And I mean, to play the devil's advocate, as a Big Mike on the afternoon show would say, we are the most pro devil radio station. We advocate for them often. you know, all this legislation is for show. It's not something that's ever going to be enforced. It's not something. Right now, what we're this whole discussion is about, you know, really applies to one person, a U.S. Senator elect using the restroom in the U.S. Capitol. I mean, this is not, in my opinion, legislation that that we should be focused on.
Yeah, and I'm just trying to remember the Delaware senator elect's last name. I want to say it's McBride, but
I'll look it up.
Whatever it is. Even the senator elect is downplaying all of this and trying
Sarah McBride.
Sarah McBride is really not trying to make this a lightning rod issue. So that could ultimately be a factor in some of this as well, rather than what we normally hear and see, where it's the trans activists that are probably the smallest group, but simultaneously the loudest.
It's a political stunt that, to be honest, is of no benefit to any of the American people.
Yeah. Now, we've heard the chatter about celebs that didn't like the outcome of the presidential election. And I've seen a couple different reports that former talk show host, sometimes actress Ellen DeGeneres is going to be moving to Great Britain. And this is instructive for the people on the political left. I know there's always this chatter, oh, if Trump gets elected, I'm leaving the country, by some of the high-profile celeb types. And I want to bring this up because I'll take these reports at face value that this is happening. I think this sort of happened with Eva Longoria, and then Eva Longoria kind of walked it back and said she wasn't leaving. And so there was a little confusion about what exactly Eva Longoria, the actress, was up to, because she's not a Trump fan at the slightest and was upset with the outcome of the election. But this is instructive because here's Ellen DeGeneres. She's got the means to leave. So many of these celebs that make this claim, I don't like the election, I'm leaving America, I'm leaving the country. This is the problem with what we were talking about in a previous segment about taxing the rich. These are the people that have the ability to leave and take their resources somewhere else. And that's going to be the same dilemma for the tax the rich activists on the left side of the political spectrum, that eventually when you tax something out of existence, now you've run out of the money from where.
That's why Ron DeSantis got Jeff Bezos's taxes check and Jay Inslee did not.
Jeff Bezos deciding that he would relocate from Washington.
Leave his balls behind.
Yeah. So, you know, Ellen DeGeneres says she's done with the United States, at least according to the reports, that she's going to reside in Great Britain now. All righty.
Bye.
And this is why I give this cautionary warning to all the people that are defiant about taxing the rich, or that make this claim somehow that taxing the rich is going to solve the problems. Here's a spoiler alert. It's not. One other big news story that's kind of cropping up this morning. This has two factors. First, let's start with the United Nations. The United States representative, the United States ambassador to the United Nations, vetoed a ceasefire resolution at the United Nations because it didn't include return of the hostages that Hamas is holding. So that was one of the things that happened late yesterday. And then the International Criminal Court, and I believe that this is Belgium, The Hague. The International Criminal Court has issued arrest warrants for the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, but then also a Hamas leader known as Mohammed Diouf. The Hamas leader also goes by Mohammed Diab Ibrahim Al-Masri. One report is saying that the Hamas leader is presumed dead. So I'm confused on why the International Criminal Court goes down this.
Super dead.
I don't know why the International Criminal Court would go down this avenue necessarily to potentially put out an arrest warrant. I guess this is the better safe than sorry.
And in a newest reality show, they will be cellmates.
I was going to say, CBS might have something with that edition of Big Brother. And then Richie Torres is the Bronx, New York, or he's one of the New York borough congressmen in the United States Congress. And he is incredibly candid about some of the nonsense that goes on in the Democratic Party. He's a Democrat himself. And he posted, the ICC's decision to issue an arrest warrant against the leadership of Israel represents the weaponization of international law at its most egregious. The ICC set a precedent for criminalizing self-defense. Any country daring to defend itself against an enemy that exploits civilians as human shields will face persecution posing as prosecution. So an important reaction there from a Democrat in Congress to what the ICC has decided to issue an arrest warrant for Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister. So there's a little bit of what's going on this morning around the news world. And some stories that we've been following on so many shows in the past.